Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of LGBT books, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is David Wichman. David is an author, adventure guide, and sexual healer. He has just written a book called Every Grain of Sand, and we're going to talk about that. Good evening, David.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How's life in Palm Springs?
Great.
Okay. How's life in Palm Springs tonight with COVID?
I felt very fortunate because it's nice weather and, you know, I can just swim in the backyard and do a whole bunch of nothing, but I would certainly like to get out of here.
Right. Exactly. And, okay, so we're going to talk about your book, Every Grain of Sand, just came out, available on Amazon.com.
Yeah.
A memoir. Tell us about it.
It's a story. It's a book I've been working on for many, many years, and I had a lot of false starts, but it's a story of my life, and it's my life as it unfolded after experiencing some severe traumatic experiences as a child and how I sort of navigated in and out of that trauma and became the person I am today. And that's the gist of it. There's a lot of sex. There's a lot of sex work, a lot of crime, a lot of drug addiction, a lot of homelessness, how do I say it? Everybody who reads it, most people write me and say, I went to read your book, and I just wanted to read the foreword. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I finally had to go to sleep because I couldn't put it down.
Yes.
And I think for me, that's such a huge compliment. You know, it just felt so good to hear that. But also, people are very engrossed in it. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great story, and you've got it laid out really well. As you mentioned, it starts out with childhood abuse, surviving on the streets, white-collar crime, drug abuse, and then embracing your second chances, which you've had quite a few fabulous and destructive second chances. Do you want to talk about any of those second chances?
Sure. I mean, I think what's important here is to remember is that, as somebody who is in the throes of addiction and alcoholism and experiencing an unimaginable kind of dark life, I think there was a lot of starts and stops, a lot of, giving up and falling, flat on my face. But I think one of the things that really is interesting is that I finally went to jail. I got arrested, and I was really in a situation where I was going to be put away for a very long time. And this judge gave me like the last second chance I could ever get. And I heard that. And for me, it felt like this is it. This isn't a second chance. This is your last chance. And as your last chance, you better make the best of it. And that's what I did. I embarked on this journey. I have stayed on this journey for better or for worse and through all the drama. Mm-hmm. And I haven't chose to get loaded again or to return to that life. So, yeah, for sure.
Good. And you mentioned, get loaded, meaning you're part of the recovery community. Is that correct?
I am, yeah.
Going to switch back to the in time of COVID. What do you think is going on with the recovery community now that, the meetings are Zoomed and nobody's hugging and there's very little face-to-face interaction? Do you think that – what are those challenges? How's that hurting things or helping things? Or how's that happening?
I think it's really a mixed bag. It's so exciting in a way. I mean, I kind of have a different perspective. I mean, I operate from a place of gratitude. And so I'm just like, I'm jumping into the Zoom meeting and I'm seeing four or five people I haven't seen in years because they live in San Francisco, or I'm seeing my friends in New York City, or I'm seeing my friends in Atlanta. And literally the first few times I got a little teary-eyed. I was like, this is so amazing because I get to see these people that I never get to see. And then, you know, we see them on Facebook or on Instagram or something, but when you're there, being able to communicate with them face to face, it's really special. But I think because I work with a lot of men in the steps and I do, you know, we still, it's funny. I just met with a sponsee today and we're masked. We wear our masks and we, you know, do the reading and we talk about his recovery and do these things. And I still do it. You know, I'm not going to not work with others. I'm not going to not show up and be a service, but it has been, at first, the first couple of months was really pretty hairy. And I fell into kind of a depression myself. I was really, you know, at first it was novel and then it wore on me. And then I really started getting into the toxicity of social media and all of the things that were going on. And I got really ungrateful and I got really depressed. And I just kind of pulled myself up and said, you know, you're going to either let this thing control you, or you're going to take advantage of this opportunity and go help others. And so that's basically what I've done. I've just, you know, threw myself into whatever kind of service I could get into.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have had that same experience. You know, first it's just a shock and it's a letdown. And there is a lot, people are spending a lot more time on social media, which is good and bad, but mostly bad because after a while, there's a law of diminishing returns of anything. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you have to, you find passion and you find purpose, and that's the key to keep it going. Let's talk a little bit about your early family, because it seems like that in your book, it seems like it of course it's the very beginning, but it seems like it's a theme throughout the book. You keep going back to your family, you keep going back physically and emotionally. So let's talk about your family story.
Well, I think most children, you know, when they come from, kids just want to be loved. They just want to be, and they want the love of their parents. And we're taught from very early on that, that your parents are the end. You believe your parents are the end all be all of what love is, what that means, and the way they share that with you. And I think for me, the struggle I had was right away early on when the trauma first began and the sexual assault, the sexual molestation happened. And after that, the relationship with my family that took place, there wasn't sexual abuse in my family. I was sexually molested by a neighbor when I was 6 years old. And that created this behavior problem in me. And then their response and reaction to it was so harsh. It was so violent. And I think what happens is you keep going back thinking that the love is going to come, that they're going to, that the arms are going to open up and everything's going to be, because you hear all this thing, these things about forgiveness and second chances and restoration and, you know, rehabilitation and reunification. I mean, I should say and those are, and in the rooms in 12 step, you hear a lot about that too. People go back after years of separation and disenfranchisement with their family. And all of a sudden, oh, my mom and I are best friends now. And I take her to the gay bars. And my dad and I, he used to be really abusive and now we're the best friends. And that story I kept playing in my head thinking, well, that's one of the promises of recovery. That's going to happen for me too. But even early on, that was my belief system. I really thought one day I'm going to get the love I'm seeking from these people. And I won't say that it never came. It just didn't transpire the way that I thought it would. It didn't look the way I expected it to look. And and the pain and the remorse and I think the regret just overwhelmed the entire dynamic. And you know, my stepfather, who is, you know, a big part of my early childhood story, died yesterday morning of kidney cancer. And it was so you've caught me in a very surreal moment in my life where he's just been this massive part of my journey, you know, for all the pain and all of the lessons that I learned as a result of that very violent relationship. And and it's in a way, and I was trying to discuss this with my partner, in a way the grief it felt almost as it was supposed to be this profound, heavy, upsetting, it's a loss. It feels like a real heavy loss for me. But at the same time, it's sort of like I've done this work. I know who I am. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable mm-hmm. in my own skin. I was able to, while he was passing, I called my little brother, or my little brother called me on the phone, and I said, you know, if you get a chance, give him a hug for me and tell him that I love him and tell him that I wish only the best for him and that what happened mm-hmm. in the past happened in the past, and I don't wish any, there's no ill will, there's no bad feelings, just that I wish only comfort and love for him. And mm-hmm. what was, he said, well, I have to tell you that I just held the phone up to his ear while you said all that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And he heard every word you said. And for me, it was like, it was beautiful in this way that it just felt like, okay, I'm okay with that. I'm okay that he heard that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that some, like, it's all water under the bridge. It just means I learned so much from that experience that I'm the person I am today in large part because of that experience.
Right. Right.
You know, and so that's the way, unfortunately, that's the way sometimes we grow. It's that we
or fortunately.
Learn what we don't
or fortunately.
Want. Yeah. Or fortunately. Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
There's a quote and I wrote it down down in my little notes of things that I carry around all day. I think from your foreword, it said that everything in our lives ultimately leads us somewhere. And this is just part of it. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. Okay. Well, I'm going to shift gears to your, you said there was a lot of sex in your book, and yes, there is quite a bit of sex in your work, in your book, excuse me, and in your work because you're a sex worker. Is that the right term I'm using?
Right.
Today?
Yeah,
I like that term a lot. It's very not negative. I believe that sex is a wonderful and positive thing, and we should embrace it, enjoy it, share it, whatever makes people happy, and you have made a lot of people happy. So how did you get into, how did you get into the healing aspect of your sex work?
Oh, good question. I like that. It's completely by accident. Completely, like absolutely. Like, I think you can really discover that reading my book, when you read my book too, today, it's even a deeper level of wanting to help and witness other people's healing process, and especially in men who have experienced deep-rooted shame and guilt and internalized homophobia and body image and it just the whole gamut. But I just completely by accident I had these. Especially when I was writing the book, I would really didn't pay as much attention to how profound the experiences I was having with my clients was until I had to retell the story, until we really started digging into the crux of the work that I was doing. And, you know, you tell the story of working with somebody who has a disability or somebody who is experiencing PTSD or deep shame, and you see the light come on in their eyes, and you think to yourself, I'm really glad I was here for that, but you don't really take this like pat myself on the back credit for it until you actually look back and go, wow, the collection of the body of work that I've done over these 14 years has been incredibly gratifying, not for my clients so much as it's been for me to witness all of this powerful, growth. And it's wild. I mean, it's wild. And so, I decided to dive a little bit deeper.
For some of our listeners, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay.
All right, of our listeners that don't know, David does work and receives a lot of gratification from working with handicapped people. There's a wonderful thing on one of his websites where he speaks about helping a person in a wheelchair who came to see him once, who's very kind of ashamed of it and thought it was not going to be a positive experience. And you made it because you listened and you made yourself available and gave him this wonderful experience. And then in the book, you talk about how what you gained from helping him, as you said, when you saw the light go on, you saw the power of sexual healing. And I do believe that there are certain people that are so good at that. And what do you think is that attribute? Obviously there's a physical part of you that you're a handsome man and well endowed, which I know because I've looked at your videos. What are the attributes of a good escort or a good sexual healer? In fact, there's a photograph in the book. You were once escort of the year.
Right, in 2008.
So what's your best attribute?
I have to tell you, is I think the most important gift that you can give to someone you're working with, a client, is that they become the absolutely most important person in that moment, in that room with you, that the world outside is able to disappear when they become the priority, when their needs are and their desires are met with your openness to receive them without sort of this, you can have good boundaries and still remain open. As long as your client believes and sees within that you really love being there and you do really love being there, I think that's a recipe for success. Let me be very clear about something there. There are many ways of being a really great provider. And really great providers can be porn stars who just show up in the room to show off their bodies, to doing virtual phone sex type of thing. There's the whole, there's an entire spectrum of sex work out there. Just for me personally, because I think I've experienced so much shame and so much unbelonging, so much isolation, loneliness, and despair in my life, and have gotten to the other side of it, and what excites me is that I know the other side of that is the sense of belonging and wholeness and the sense of grace and the sense of well-being, that I can't wait to be a part of that with other men that I work with. And I think there's a lot of guys out there like me who see an opportunity to be that person to somebody who's on a journey with their sexual wholeness, with their sexual health. And I always thought it was always going to be just about having a big cock and fucking and getting money and getting what I wanted with the money and getting validation and everybody saying, oh, look, because I always felt so ugly all my life. And then all of a sudden I'm desirable to this specific community of men, that it gave me this sense of, self-esteem, sort of this false sense of self-esteem, and I didn't realize the aspect of the work I was truly doing was unraveling and uncovering wounds, old wounds, and allowing men to find acceptance with themselves, and seeing that happen is like crazy. And for me, that's the type of validation I feel that says, oh, you've done your job, you've done what you were born to do. And I just have recently started getting used to being able to say, I'm doing what I know I was born to do. Because I've never felt like I've had a path. Really? Like, I never felt like, oh, this is going to be my career. I never felt like, oh, I'm going to be a fireman. I never really felt that directed, like that this was purposeful. And I feel that today, more than ever, like my purpose in this world is doing exactly what I'm doing right now. no matter what it looks like. Especially if I'm designing and writing online programs on self-pleasure or doing meditations or doing sound bowl healing and all these other little modalities outside that are sexually based in arousal, or that I'm having human-to-human contact, I still feel like I'm living on purpose. So.
Great. Well, for the sake of our community, I do hope there are many people like you. I haven't run across very many. I do know several people who are sex workers, and they do not have your passion for help. They do not have your insight so far. But maybe I'm just the people I run into are different, and I don't mean I haven't.
They haven't written a book yet.
A few of them have written books because I've had them on my show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know,
okay.
I live in Fort Lauderdale, and it's like, there's a lot of porn stars who are just friends. And, you know, who are like, you know, doctors and lawyers and policemen are, you know, do porn at night escort on weekends. And it's kind of a free-for-all here. It's very, very democratic, but it is kind of a different – it is a little different here. So you mentioned there's a couple of things I still want to talk about in the last 8 minutes here. And one of them is – this work you're doing with sound baths and sound bath sanctuaries.
Oh, yeah.
I want to hear about it. Let's go. Come on.
Well,
tell me about it.
I started doing a lot of – I have a recording studio and things like that, and I started studying – I've meditated and studied spiritual work most of my life trying to figure out my problem, figure out what the problem was. And me both, buddy. Right. So when I started delving into sound, binaural beats and all of these different types of meditation, and I got introduced to sound baths here in the desert. But I'd had a deep hypnosis before and had experienced it. But I got myself a set of sound bowls to practice. I ordered it. They came from Nepal, and they're gorgeous big sound bowls, and they make this beautiful vibration. And I started practicing on my partner. And I just thought, let me just set – and I started setting it on his body in areas where – like the in his belly and in his crotch and in his ass and on his arms and in his hands and all these sensual places and playing the sound bowls. And he was like getting – it was just wild. And I started doing these – and I just started developing a rhythm and a sort of a – not massage, but it's sort of like – an arousal system where I can arouse and play the sound bowls. And one of my dear friends is transitioning right now. He's in hospice care and he has cancer. And about two or three times a week, I take my sound bowls over there and I give him erotic sound healing. I touch him. I kiss him. I hold him in my arms. I make sure that he feels loved and intimate, like physical contact, because he's in his final days of his life, and the sound bowls sort of soothe him because he's agitated sometimes, and it's so powerful to kind of delve into these new areas of vibratory opening up, especially during COVID when you can't really be around people and you can't really touch people too much. I've been given this great opportunity to be able to touch this man and to be able to hold him in my arms and, you know, be present for him. So,
great.
Yeah.
In fact, I just read an article where they're using some sort of sound to help open up the blood vessels for Alzheimer's. Have you ever seen that one?
I haven't heard that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's a certain megahertz. Yeah. And they're finding that it actually removes the plaque or whatever. And it's a certain wavelength or a certain sound wavelength. It's crazy, which we don't know. I mean, there's so much we don't know about wavelengths and electricity and things like that and light. I also believe light has a healing source. Certain things of light. Another thing I would like to talk to you about. You're just like a Renaissance man of stuff. Is your adventure tours? I love seeing the pictures. Yeah, tell me about those.
You know, that spun up out of my escort work. You know, I'm 52 years old now, and I have my client base is you know, they're not all super wealthy and they're not all high-end clients, but they are people I have deep relationships with, people who I've known for the better part of 10 years, gentlemen who are single, retirees, people who have wanted to travel the world and maybe don't want to travel the world alone, don't want to experience sitting in the middle of a pyramid in Egypt by themselves without anybody to witness or to reflect back to them what it's like to swim with a humpback whale or to, you know, go sit in the jungle with a silverback gorilla. And that is my lane. And I really love doing that. And so for about 8 years now, I've been to every continent. I've traveled almost every country except for India. And I have I don't do vacation travel. I really don't like cruises unless they're gay cruises and there's a lot of sex. I definitely do adventure travel, and that's why I named the company The Male Adventure, because it's adventure. Okay. We're not sitting around drinking martinis and wearing black ties. Yeah, and sometimes we do, but it's I prefer not to. Prefer to scuba diving or skydiving.
Right.
Know, but,
well, I saw your stuff.
And they're usually trip of a lifetime type stuff. Yeah.
Sure, and that's what you want. Yeah. And let me give people the website. Let me give you a plug here. It's www.themaleadventure, one word, lowercase, .com. And we'll take you right to there, and you can get in touch with David. And he will, will do anything. You'll go anywhere and everywhere, it looks like, from what I've read about you.
I will. Well, right now, it's very interesting. Right. Let me just add something here. Right now, since we have COVID and a lot of travel restrictions are in place, I bought a luxury RV, 25-foot RV, and I'm currently taking people trips to the national parks, like Bryce Canyon, National Park, Yosemite.
Yeah.
When Yosemite's not burning, I would go there. But
I know.
Of beautiful national parks. And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm just trying to get my clients to get on board with getting tested, and let's get on the road. So that's where I'm at.
My husband and I were talking about this spring renting or getting an RV and driving. We live in South Florida, but we would we'd like to see the national parks. I haven't seen them in a long time. And I just love them. And there's so much to see in the United States. And I believe that, you know, you can really spend some really spiritual times. And I think that the mountains carry some magnetism or some magic in
there.
But, yeah, I didn't know about the RV. What a great idea. Okay, David, we have 2 minutes left in our fastest 30-minute interview ever. And what I'm going to put the question to you is, you're at a party or – at a meeting, and this young man comes up to you and he says, "I want to be just like you. How do I start?"
I said, "Here, give me your phone number. I'm going to send you a link to an article I wrote." I wrote this amazing in-depth article about how to do exactly what I do for a sociology magazine in Australia. Yes, I'll send it to you sometime. It's great. It's called How to Make It Work. David-SF,
How to Make
Being a Male Escort.
Okay, send me the link, and I'll put it up on this website.
Sounds good.
Okay, send me the link. I'll put it on the show page so that when people get the archive for this, this link will be archived for 2 or 3 years. You can also download this episode. People can download this episode. This is a pretty well-established thing. We have 60 seconds left. Is there anything left we haven't talked about that you want to say?
Don't forget to buy my book. Go to dtwichman.com or look for Every Grain of Sand on Amazon by David P. Wichman.
Amazon.
Yeah.
David P. I'm sorry. And your David-SF is your escort site. Is that right?
Yeah, David-SF is my escort site. Yeah, that's too much information.
You never know.
Yeah.
How I found you.
That's how I
found you. And look, well, David, this has been a treat. Thank you so much. I told you we'd make it happen.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, and good night.
I hope I delivered. All right. Good night.
You delivered great. We love you. Okay. Good night, all.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.